Moat. It was pure madness. They were months away from that. Yes, the doors could be closed. The basic machinery for doing that was in place. And yes, the doors could be hermetically tight for at least 100 hours after closure. But nothing else was ready. The sensitive monitoring equipment, the fail-safe subsystems, the backups, none of that would be in place and operational for many weeks. Then there was supposed to be at least 6 weeks of testing, slowly building up to the event itself. To do it in 2 days made no sense at all, except to a politician. At best, all they would learn was whether or not the jugglers had remained inside the moat when the door was closed. They would learn nothing about how the data flow was terminated, or how the internal connections between the nodes adapted to the loss of contact with the wider ocean. Naki swore and hit the console. She wanted to blame Sivaraksa, but she knew that was unfair. Sivaraksa had to keep the politicians happy, or the whole project would be endangered. He was just doing what he had to do, and he almost certainly liked it even less than she did. Naki pulled on shorts and a T-shirt and found some coffee in one of the adjoining mess rooms. The moat was deserted, quiet except for the womb-like throb of generators and air circulation systems. A week ago, it would have been as noisy now as at any other time of day, for the construction had continued around the clock. But the heavy work was done now. The last ore dirigible had arrived while Naki was away. All that remained was the relatively light work of completing the moat's support subsystems. Despite what Sivaraksa had said in his message, there was really very little additional work needed to close the doors. Even 2 days of frantic activity would make no difference to the usefulness of the stunt. When she had judged her state of mind to be calmer, she returned to her room and called Sivaraksa. It was still far too early, but seeing as the bastard had already ruined her day, she saw no reason not to reciprocate. Naki? His silver hair was a sleep-matted mess on the screen. I take it you got my message? You didn't think I'd take it lying down, did you? I don't like it any more than you do. But I see the political necessity. Do you? This isn't like switching a light on and off, Jutta. His eyes widened at the familiarity, but she pressed on regardless. If we screw up the first time, there might never be a second chance. The jugglers have to play along. Without them, all you've got here is a very expensive mid-ocean refueling point. Does that make political sense to you? He pushed green fingers through the mess of his hair. Have some breakfast, get some fresh air, then come to my office. We'll talk about it then. I've had breakfast, thanks very much. Then get the fresh air, you'll feel better for it. Sivaraksa rubbed his eyes. You're not very happy about this, are you? It's bloody madness, and the worst thing is you know it. And my hands are tied. 10 years from now, Naki, you'll be sitting in my place having to make similar decisions. And 10 to 1 there'll be some idealistic young scientist telling you what a hopeless piece of deadwood you are. He managed a weary smile. Mark my words, because I want you to remember this conversation when it happens. There's nothing I can do to stop this, is there? I'll be in my office in... Sivaraksa glanced at a clock. 30 minutes. We can talk about it properly, then. There's nothing to talk about. But even as she said that, she knew she sounded petulant and inflexible. Sivaraksa was right. It was impossible to manage a project as complex and expensive as the moat without a degree of compromise. Naki decided that Sivaraksa's advice, at least the part about getting some fresh air, was worth heeding. She descended a helical staircase until she reached the upper surface of the moat's ring-shaped wall. The concrete was cold beneath her bare feet, and a pleasant, cool breeze caressed her legs and arms. The sky had brightened on one horizon. Machines and supplies were arranged neatly on the upper surface, ready for use, although further construction would be halted until the delegates completed their visit. Stepping nimbly over the tracks, conduits, and cables that crisscrossed each other on the upper surface, Naki walked to the side. A high railing, painted in high-visibility, rot-resistant sealer, fenced the inner part of the moat. She touched it to make sure it was dry, then leaned over. The distant side of the moat was a colorless thread 20 kilometers away, like a very low wall of sea mist. What could be done in 2 days? Nothing. Or at least nothing compared to what had always been planned. But if the new schedule was a fait accompli, and that was the message she was getting from Sivaraksa, then it was her responsibility to find a way to squeeze some scientific return from the event. She looked down at the cut, and at the many spindly gantries and catwalks that spanned the aperture or hung some way toward the center of the moat. Perhaps if she arranged for some standard-issue probes to be prepared today, the type dropped from dirigibles. Naki's eyes darted around, surveying fixtures and telemetry conduits. It would be hard work to get them in place in time, and even harder to get them patched into some kind of real-time acquisition system. But it was doable, just barely. The data quality would be laughable compared to the super-sensitive instruments that were going to be installed over the next few months, but crude was a lot better than nothing at all. She laughed aloud. An hour ago she would have stuck pins into herself rather than collaborate in this kind of fiasco. Naki walked along the railing until she reached a pair of pillar-mounted binoculars. They were smeared with rot protection. She wiped the lens and eyepieces clean with a rag that was tied to the pedestal, then swung the binoculars in a slow arc, panning across the dark circle of water trapped within the moat. Only vague patches of what Naki would have called open water were visible. The rest was either a verdant porridge of juggler organisms or fully grown masses of organized floating matter, linked together by trunks and veins of the same green biomass. The latest estimate was that there were 3 small nodes within the ring. The smell was atrocious, but that was an excellent sign as well. It correlated strongly with the density of organisms in the nodes. She had experienced that smell many times, but it never failed to slam her back to that morning when Mina had died. As much as the pattern jugglers knew anything, they were surely aware of what was planned here. They had drunk the minds of the swimmers who had already entered the sea near or within the moat, and not one of those swimmers was ignorant of the project's ultimate purpose. It was possible that the knowledge simply couldn't be parsed into a form the aliens would understand, but Naki considered that unlikely. The closure of the moat would be about as stark a concept as one could imagine. If nothing else, geometry was the one thing the jugglers did understand. And yet, the aliens chose to remain within the closing moat, hinting that they would tolerate the final closure that would seal them off from the rest of the ocean. Perhaps they were not impressed. Perhaps they knew that the event would not rob them of every channel of communication, but only the chemical medium of the ocean. Sprites and other airborne organisms would still be able to cross the barrier. It was impossible to tell. The only way to know was to complete the experiment, to close the massive sea doors and see what happened. She leaned back, taking her eyes from the binoculars. Now Naki saw something unexpected. It was a glint of hard white light scudding across the water within the moat. Naki squinted, but still she could not make out the object. She swung the binoculars hard around, got her eyes behind them, and then zigzagged until something flashed through the field of view. She backed up and locked onto it. It was a boat, and there was someone in it. She keyed in the image zoom stabilize function, and the craft swelled to clarity across a clear kilometer of sea. The craft was a ceramic hulled vessel of the type that the swimmer teams used, 5 or 6 meters from bow to stern. The person sat behind a curved spray shield, their hands on the handlebars of the control pillar. An inboard thruster propelled the boat without ever touching water. The figure was difficult to make out, but the billowing orange clothes left no room for doubt. It was one of the Vahishta delegates, and Naki fully expected it to be Raphael Weir. He was headed toward the closest node. For an agonizing few moments, she did not know what to do. He was going to attempt to swim, she thought, just like she and Mina had done. And he would be no better prepared for the experience. She had to stop him somehow. He would reach the node in only a few minutes. Naki sprinted back to the tower, breathless when she arrived. She reached a communications post and tried to find the right channel for the boat. but either she was doing it wrong or Weir had sabotaged the radio.